Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. The crisis in Egypt has gained worldwide attention. Aljazeera.net/English has seen an incredible rise in the amount of hits it has gotten, because it is not only a portal for the Arab world to view itself, but it's a portal for people around the world to view the Arab world. Our guest today, Dr. Larry Burris of the School of Journalism and Dr. Kathy Burris of the Department of Elementary and Special Education, took their summer vacation in three countries in the Middle East, one of which was Egypt, and we're going to talk to them today about what they saw, what they did, and what, if anything, they were able to pick up as far as any undercurrent of discontent is concerned. And we're really grateful to have both of you here today. I think this is your first time, Kathy. Larry, you've been on before.
It's good to be here.
Yes, thank you, Jenna.
But we've worked with Kathy before on other projects, President's Commission on the Status of Women and such. Let me start by asking you guys when you were in country and how long you were there.
We were in Egypt about 3 or 4 days. Really wasn't very long. And part of the time, we were doing the usual touristy sorts of things, pyramids and Sphinx. But then there was also, in talking to some of the people, some of the tour guides, got a kind of a different impression of what was going on. Kathy, you're more in tune with what people are thinking and feeling. Why don't you talk about the tour guide a little bit?
That's the part, I think, Gina, and this just happened. So Larry and I, how long have we been back? Just
about a month.
Just a little over a month. As an early childhood person, I am always amazed at, as we're touring and talking to people, and you hear these crises around the world, pretty much there's moms and dads doing what they do. And so, but what we found in Egypt, and I was thinking of our bus driver, and we spent, 4 days?
4 days.
With Mr. Abdul. And our tour guide, Amir, we'd be talking, and he was bilingual, so he was talking both in Arabic and English. But all of a sudden, Mr. Abdul, who wasn't very expressive in English, remember that, hon? It went on for about 10 minutes. He was talking, and Amir turned to us, and he said, "Mr. Abdul wants to say how wonderful the United States is because it is a democracy." Do you remember that? He said democracy 3 or 4 times. And Amir said, "It is so wonderful. You live in a democracy. And Mr. Abdul only wishes that for us."
It was
telling.
It was interesting. As Amir was talking to us, he at first, of course, would not say very much.
Oh, very guarded.
Very guarded. But once we started asking questions about, well, how are the people, mm-hmm. and can you talk a little bit about the politics of Egypt, he opened up a little more, mm-hmm. and was very expressive about both the police and the military. I commented one time about the police on every corner, and he was very down on the police, but was very high on the military. He said the military and the people both support each other. Very, very much so. The police were very corrupt. Mm-hmm. So there was some, I don't want to say bitterness, there was some guardedness there. There was some discussion of politics. Overall, in terms of what's going on today, when we were there, there was no indication of anything overt. Mm-mm. There were tourists, there were people going to their jobs, there were people praying, as the Muslims do. It was a day in the life. And then all of a sudden, we had the events coming up in Egypt.
Go back to that piece, Larry, where you're talking and telling Gina about the police and the soldiers. And I think you have to give some background with the traffic. You know, you have to talk a bit about the difference in traffic patterns. But there was no regard for the police. Remember a couple of times when we were jammed in traffic? I mean, people were opening the windows, yelling at the police, gesturing. There was not a high respect from others about the police.
If we think the traffic is bad in Middle Tennessee, mm-hmm. Kind of imagine Middle Tennessee with no traffic rules.
People, you know what it would be? It would be like 12 o'clock on MTSU, change of classes on a sunny day. It's just all over.
With no control.
It sounds like you're describing Rome.
I've never
been to Italy, but I have heard that Rome is just, you can't navigate.
You just go.
No. So Amir, our tour guide, said that the police just aren't controlling anything. That there were police there, and we saw them just sort of standing on the corner, just kind of watching. Amir was very careful to have us protected. He said, yes. there's some places in town that you shouldn't go in. And he was very careful to say, if you get lost, and they gave us time to just kind of wander. And he said, it's okay. You know, we're very careful with our tourists here. But he said, if you get lost and if you need help, he said, do not ask the police for help. He said, ask a taxi driver for help. He said that the taxi driver will probably drive you all around and charge you a lot of money. But he said, the police will shake you down.
And this brings to mind the complaints of corruption.
Yes.
More so with the police than with the military. The demonstrations that have been taking place in Cairo, in a way, it didn't surprise me that the military has, you know, to an extent, at least for a time, was hands off on the demonstrators, because the Sudanese who have come to MTSU and have escaped, you know, that crippling situation, which now has resulted in secession, told me that they started out as members of the Liberation Front, but then they decided to put down their arms and figure education was the better way. And I said, why? And they said, because I don't want to kill a member of my family. Mm-hmm. And I think that virtually everybody in Egypt, from what I have read, has a member or a friend in the military.
Absolutely.
And a high regard. I mean, they look at the military. In different times when we were driving around, you'd see convoys of the military, and it wasn't just Amir and Mr. Abdu. There was a regard. The soldiers were there for the people, and not the police.
And there was kind of a going back and forth, I guess, way to express it. The people appreciated the military, and as you pointed out, the military was taking kind of a hands off. We are here to protect you if you need us.
Correct.
The military and the police were always a presence. They were always there, but it wasn't overpowering.
Right.
You just sort of, and in most instances, you felt very, very safe. But again, our tour guide, Mr. Amir, was very careful to say, do not count on the police. They will shake you down. You are obviously Americans. You are obviously tourists. We're very careful with what we wore. All of our clothing was very, very subdued. The camera was in a nondescript bag. But he said, we just recognize tourists. We recognize them, and the police will shake you down.
Tell Gina, remember when we visited the one palace? And I think this, where there's nobody there. It came back again to democracy because we just take it for granted, yet this is something that and Amir didn't really have a sense. We talked about our president in the White House.
One of the sites we visited was President Mubarak's palace.
Summer Palace.
The Summer Palace, a huge building, as you might expect, a very, very opulent, very large, the large land around it.
And what city is this in?
This is Cairo.
Alexandria.
Okay, keep our city straight. It was in Alexandria, and there was nobody there. And we said, well, why isn't anybody here? You know, are there tourists here? And he said, no, that nobody is allowed inside the grounds. And I said, kind of offhand, said, oh, that's kind of odd. I said, if you want to visit the White House, you can go to the White House.
And he was there was quiet in it. He just stared at Larry.
He was shocked, and he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you get a ticket, and you go into the White House. I said, you're escorted. There's a tour. I said, you don't go to the living quarters, obviously.
Right.
But I said that the White House, where the president lives, is an office building.
Yes. You stand in line. You go to the red room and the blue room.
And he just could not understand that. And once again, he commented on that. Isn't democracy great? You get to go where your president lives. And obviously, there's security there. We said you don't wander around. He said he understood that. But the fact that the president, in that sense, was so accessible, at least the house was. And one of the complaints was this huge summer palace was just empty and being very well maintained, but the president wasn't there. And our guide and a couple of other people had said, why are we doing this?
You went to Cairo, Alexandria.
Yes.
Giza, I guess. You said you saw the pyramids, right?
Saw the pyramids,
right.
And they were everything they're cracked up to be. very large, and one of the concerns we had heard about all the T-shirt vendors, just sort of grabbing all around you. Mm-hmm. There's an area around the pyramids that I guess is like neutral territory. There are no tourist traps in probably 100 yards around the pyramids. Now, mm-hmm. outside that 100 yards, T-shirt vendors and camel rides and trinkets and all that, but there's an area you can go up to the pyramids and to a certain extent climb on them up to a certain point. So they try to maintain that tourist. And I imagine a lot of people we had talked to in years past had complained about the T-shirt vendors. Mm-hmm. And my guess is that the government has said tourists don't like this. They want to appreciate the pyramids and the Sphinx as they are. So they kind of backed everybody away, that there's an area that's sort of like neutral territory around them.
And now with all of the turmoil, the economy is suffering because people are keeping their shops open for only 3 or 4 hours at a time. The State Department has told Americans quite some time ago to get the heck out of Dodge, and they forget about the tourist trade right now, at least as things stand at the present time.
We felt very, very safe. Inside the hotel, you had to check into the hotel. You went through a screening device, much like airports. That's fine. There were police on every corner, as we said, and we felt safe. And because tourism is, of course, a major part of the economy there, so they do try to protect the tourist. And again, as we were told, there are areas that you don't wander into. We wanted to go to a market. And Amir said, okay, well, I'll take you to the market. But he said, here's some things that you don't do. Do not go into the shop. Do not touch any of the goods. He said, I'm going to take you to a regular place where the Egyptians go. Mm-hmm. But again, you'll be recognized as a tourist, not just an American, as a tourist. And he said, if you want to buy something, I will negotiate for you. And he said, the fact that Amir is Egyptian and the shop owners are Egyptian, there is, of course, a bond there, and we didn't want to buy anything there. But
I think what Larry's talking about, too, is in Larry and I, Gina, we don't negotiate. I mean, you know, if it's the price, we're like, okay, and that's why let me talk.
You don't dicker.
We don't dicker well. So those markets, we usually pass through and enjoy them, but we're not good at negotiating the price. And that is all about what Egypt is. And so that when you talk about the tension that we're seeing today, that undercurrent of, what would you call it, Larry, the stress for the economy, it's constant. I mean, there are different times when we were driving through, and no one would, we never felt threatened, but there's people all over trying to make money. Remember when Mr. Abdul stopped the little van?
People would come up to the vehicle and try to sell you things.
And he would say, no, and so they would leave. But it's constant, even walking. We spent the last day there by ourselves. Felt very safe in Cairo walking about, but there were people always giving you the nod. Do you want this? Do you want that? No.
Did you pick up on this degree of economic desperation on the part of people, or did you think it was just part of the culture?
In some ways, it's part of the culture. Everywhere we went, in Jordan, Israel, and Egypt, there were people on the street corners selling things. Mm-hmm. There were also regular shops. You would go into a regular CVS pharmacy, mm-hmm. for example, and there you pay the price.
Correct.
Well, whatever the price, it's like going to a store here.
The reason I ask, of course, is because the economy is said to be the underlying impetus for the revolution that is occurring right now.
It's very poor.
And Amir, this is before what happened with the revolution, but when we left, and Larry, we had done our homework before we went, so we understood the culture, and so with Amir, you know, we would, there was no touching, you know, a lot, but and remember how Amir explained that a lot of times when the American tourists leave, they give big hugs. And that's very uncomfortable. That's very uncomfortable. And so when we left, we shook hands and we waved. But interesting, Amir, he emailed you twice, didn't he?
Twice, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just to keep in touch.
And say, Larry, you know, when your tour group asks, you know, please give me a good recommendation.
So there was a sense of friendliness and warmth, but within certain parameters. Am I reading
absolutely
you right on
within
that?
The culture and the religion.
Every place we went where we were a customer, everybody was very friendly.
Absolutely.
We went to restaurants, went to stores, and it wasn't overbearing.
No. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, oh, the Americans are here, but it's
let's
nice
get their
to
money.
Them.
No.
Everybody was very, very friendly. And if you told a shopkeeper no, there was no pressure. Mm-mm. You'd put your hand up, say no, and they'd walk away. So they weren't following you down the street. Right. Now, we were walking by one shop, and the proprietor, I guess, had food and came out and offered us a little tray of chocolate pieces. And we took one, which may have been a mistake. And then he said, "Oh, if you like this, look what else I have." And he brought up a big box of chocolates that we could buy for some exorbitant price.
Oh, that's just point of sale advertising.
Exactly.
Exactly. It's the American way. And we said, no, thank you. It's very good, but we have to go on. Well, how about a smaller box? No, we really don't need any more chocolate. And he said, thank you very much.
Yeah, correct.
And he didn't follow us down the street, didn't yell and scream about cheap Americans. But as Amir pointed out, once you go into the shop, the assumption is you will buy something. And if you touch it, that's an indication that you really like it. And if you really like it, why wouldn't you buy it?
Mm-hmm. So window shopping literally is window shopping.
Window shopping,
if
right.
If you go in, you cannot just browse.
No. And we went into we wanted to buy some jewelry. So we went in, and we were immediately offered something to drink. Coke, tea, which sets up a friendly sort of relationship. I mean, it's very it's business. It's also friendly. But we understand that's how you do business. If we were business people, and we went into a shop, a marketplace, that we would be offered something to drink. And so, yes, it's very friendly. The cynic would probably say, "Oh, they're just trying to sucker you in." I don't think so.
No,
it's part
no.
of the culture. Everywhere we
Correct.
Went. Food and drink was being offered.
I think that was genuine. I think that was genuine. Mm-hmm. But with the, with Amir, we knew our homework, so we knew about not touching. But Amir said it's because he's a tour guide, he balances that mm-hmm. with his religion. But women coming up and hugging and touching, that was very uncomfortable for him.
Let's talk about the media. Did both of you have a chance to sample the English language media while you were there and make any kind of assessment about it?
Most of the media we saw were, believe it or not, the New York Times, USA Today, CNN was there. So it was really the English language media is, for the most part, American media. The Times of London was there. There were some Egyptian English language newspapers. And the news was pretty much just the news. Mm-hmm. New sewer line being
Absolutely.
Put in somewhere, a road being blocked somewhere, a government official being arrested and indicted for a crime. You could have been in Murfreesboro.
And there wasn't, you know, this horror, you know, again, we understood the stress of the economy, but that wasn't there.
Mm-mm. Everything up to when the riots and demonstrations started was perfectly calm.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what was going on under the surface, obviously. If Amir was any indication, the people wanted more democracy.
Yes.
That was, from Amir, that was very obvious. They were tired of President Mubarak. They wanted him to leave. They wanted a chance to vote with two or three candidates. It wasn't just, well, President Mubarak's going to run, let's vote for him.
Mm-hmm, right.
They wanted real democracy.
But the in-country press apparently did not dare do any real investigative reporting under the Mubarak regime.
No, absolutely not. Egyptian media are controlled, as they are in most authoritarian countries. The media are controlled.
An anchor quit Egyptian TV, as
yes.
a matter of fact.
Yes.
She resigned because she could not take what she perceived to be the blatant pro Mubarak bias on the network.
Do you know what else? Remember what Amir said about Mubarak? That they never saw him.
They never saw him.
And that was a bother, because when we were talking about his summer palace, and he said, and he was amazed that we had this understanding of President Obama, not just as a president, but as a person. That was beyond his understanding, because they never saw Mubarak. He just never was. I don't know where he is.
Or are there pictures of Mubarak up all over the... It's not like Mao in China under Mao Zedong.
No. The President Mubarak is just not there. Again, that there are no pictures. Now, some elections had taken place several weeks before we got there, and there were posters. I asked at one point, what are all the pictures? And he said, well, this person's running for office, this person's running for district commissioner or something. There were a lot of those, but in terms of worship, sorts of things. No, that there were no giant pictures. There were no statues. President Mubarak was just invisible, and that was a concern. Obviously, if President Obama is walking down the street, you're not going to go up to him and grab him and shake hands. That's not going to happen. But what Amir also pointed out was your president, you see him.
Right.
And he understood security, but President Mubarak is never there, as far as anybody knows.
Yeah. What was going through your mind when you heard the stories of Western journalist Laura Logan, Anderson Cooper, a crew from Fox, getting beaten up in the square, people being detained by the police, cameras being confiscated, people reporting from undisclosed locations?
Once the riot started, that what happened to the reporters was really pretty typical. Once both sides got activated, I guess, there was the anti-Mubarak changed the government faction, which was very, very peaceful. And then once both sides, once the pro-Mubarak forces came along, then there was a natural tension. And I don't want to say that the pro-Mubarak people started the fighting, but there was a natural tension. Tensions were high to begin with, and those things, it just builds up. And eventually, the government, the establishment is going to get tired of the reporting and is going to crack down. That happens every time there are protests against authoritarian regimes. The thugs and the bullies come out, and the authorities figure, well, the way to control this is to control the message, kill the messenger. But then, as we've learned, now there are stories about Anderson Cooper being beaten up. We've got the story he's reporting, and then we've got another whole set of stories about reporters being beaten. So I would have thought by now that governments would have learned when you don't argue with a man who buys ink in a 55-gallon drum.
Right.
That's what it amounts to.
Or by satellite time.
By satellite time either, absolutely. So things are, if there's a bad story, there's a bad story, but then beating up reporters just makes it worse.
Major networks who have sent their people into harm's way before also have developed ways of getting around these types of things, and systems and clandestine sources.
Absolutely. You always build up sources, as you say, clandestine sources. There are places that you know to go, places not to go. But when the demonstration started, from what we've seen, they were very, very peaceful. There were marches and demonstrations. But I don't want to say it was a big party, but everything was fairly calm. Obviously, businesses were being shut down. Traffic was being blocked. But people were finally being heard, which is very unusual. Again, and Egypt has a very long history of suppression. And so when this reporter quit, when the anchor left, that in itself was unusual. That would not have happened before. You would have been thrown in jail for leaving your job. But then when she left, that in itself became a story which showed how serious the people were.
Yeah. As you say, Kathy, you guys did your homework before you went, and the human rights record of the Mubarak regime has you know, been documented by reporters, but it's not exactly top of mind in this country because international reporting in the United States gets frequently put on the back burner anyway, unless it's something in which we're directly involved, like Afghanistan. So did you guys have any concerns before you went that because you were traveling into Mubarak country, as it were, that you might run into any difficulty because that you might run into problems with the government or government officials or anything like that?
A friend called us a few days before he left and said, did you hear somebody was shot in Cairo? And we said, but there were people shot in Nashville.
Exactly.
So it's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Again, as tourists, people know that you're tourists. We're very, very careful with how we talk. As teachers, we like to know how do things work. So all of our, whenever we've traveled and had a tour guide, we always start off fairly innocuous. Oh, tell us about your family. Tell us about, you know, do your children go to school? And talking about school, as Kathy does, that leads to funding questions.
Right.
That then leads to government questions. And you worry, and if the person wants to talk, we'll continue the conversation. And we've had tour guides who have just sort of blown it off. Well, okay, you don't go that direction then. So we
this
you
know. And tell Gina too. When we were in Jordan, in the United States, or you can go to the over to our grill at MTSU, you go down to the City Cafe, and people, you can hear them expressing themselves. And, you know, you could turn to a table like, whoa, I know what that person thinks. But it was interesting because, remember our tour guide, Jordan?
The tour guide.
He lowered his, I mean, it was, and I want to say he looked around, but he kind of looked and lowered his voice in talking about his neighbors.
And his religion. He,
yes.
He was Arabic, mm-hmm. Jordanian. And we were discussing Muslim culture.
Correct.
And again, being very curious, I asked him, I said, well, when you go to the mosque, do you have like a neighborhood mosque that mm-hmm. you and your family go to, or how do you choose a mosque? And he, as Kathy said, he leaned over very quietly and said, I'm not Muslim, I'm a Christian.
Uh-huh. But he did not want, and he did not want others. I mean, we were in the hotel lobby at that time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there, but Gene, when you asked about the... No, I didn't think twice about it, you know, but we've been to China, and right. going in, when we were in Israel, we had to go through that, what would you call it, Larry, the no man's land mm-hmm. to get to Bethlehem.
Security.
Extra security, mm-hmm. and people will not pass. That was, you know, that's, again, what we take for granted. In Tennessee, we drive to New York. We'll go down and see our son in Florida. We drive. We go. Right. But you don't do that. Even to go to the one city, we had to have different tour guides, and we had to go through a no man's land of security.
The only incident, and this is the first time Kathy's heard this, I think, we were in Cairo, and we were going by an embassy, and the flag was there, and the sign on the door was there, and we use a lot of our pictures for presentations. Mm-hmm, we mm-hmm. do, it's not Kathy and Larry's vacation, but we take pictures of embassies and flags. I was across the street and took a picture of the flag, and there were two guards out front, and I took a picture of the flag, and okay, and then I took a picture of the building, and the guards across the street wagged a finger. No pictures.
Uh-huh.
Okay, they didn't come and take my camera. I waved back.
Do you remember
back,
which embassy it was?
No.
No, okay.
I put the camera in the bag,
That's
and so that they...
I do remember our walking on the
You go through the motions, and I'm not about... If they've got guns, they're obviously the police, and you just have to be kind of smart, and... Mm-hmm. People had said, and tour books had said, don't take pictures of bridges. Well, there are some fabulous bridges that everybody's taking pictures of.
Why not take pictures of bridges? What's the big deal?
Well, the thought
a
was if that bridges are vital roadways, and if you take a picture of the bridge and the understructure, you could blow it up. Okay.
Well, you could do that from Google Earth.
Yes, you could. Absolutely. But the guards at the embassy didn't threaten, they didn't come across the street, sort of wagged a finger.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of understood, okay, this is a government building of some mm-hmm. sort. They don't want you taking a picture. I got my picture. Fine. And very deliberately put the camera back in the camera bag.
Normally I do remember when you did that because we had to walk on the...
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
I do remember
mm-hmm.
that.
But that's why we did it. Oh, now you know.
But, you know, Gina, when people, if they've not been in a city like Cairo, with millions of people, it's hard to imagine how that many people could have come together so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not when you've been there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's people all over.
They're interrupting their daily lives in order to engage in this protest. And before I run out of much time, Larry, let me touch on the Facebook, Twitter aspect of what has generated this revolution. The young man who created the Facebook page mm-hmm. that called for these demonstrations was arrested and detained for a time. Some people say that the role of social media in creating this has been blown out of proportion. What's your take on it?
We've got social media out there now, and it's a form of communication we didn't have before, which makes it very easy mm-hmm. to get the word out. I don't think at the very beginning that the demonstrations were that highly organized. Some events sparked the demonstrations, and then I call you, you call your friend, they call their friend, and it's very easy to do now. If I have my Facebook group, I can hit them all at once. What's interesting about all the new technology, though, is that the government shut the internet down.
Yes.
They shut down the internet, and they also shut down cell phone service. What they didn't do was shut down the phone lines, dial-up phones, mm-hmm. and Twitter and Google, I think it was, volunteers around the world began setting up dial-up internet connections.
It's like going back to the very origins
back
of the internet.
The
yes, it was.
Right.
Slow
Absolutely.
As the devil, but at least but you got it.
But you got your pictures through there. And unless you completely shut the phone system down, which you obviously can't do, the word is going to get out. There's no way now to stop the communication, which is a good thing.
And do you think there's going to be, do you think that there is a domino effect? You mean, you went to Jordan shortly after Mubarak fired his cabinet, King Abdullah fired his cabinet.
Absolutely.
Of course, there, Tunisia and everything.
Right.
Is there a domino effect in play?
It's a domino, and part of it depends on how repressive the government is. The Egyptian government, I'm going to say, is a benign repressive government. I mean, it's authoritarian. Yes, it is. There are people thrown in jail for petty sorts of things, but it's different than other very repressive authoritarian regimes, and I think it'll be easier to change, and I think the leaders see that. It's also interesting that those governments are not as heavily theocratic. Mm-hmm. Jordan and Egypt are not as theocratic as other Middle Eastern countries. Mm-hmm. And so the control is a lot less.
Dr. Larry Burris and Dr. Kathy Burris, thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you.
I'm glad you went. I'm glad you had a chance to go. I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad you made some rewarding human contact. And I'm glad you came back
safe. Glad you came back. That's the most important.
This is MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes.